9/11. It's about not only rewriting facts, but also censoring, misdirecting, pumping up fraudulent science like the oil industry and tobacco industry did for decades, but also shifting and embracing outright authoritarian tactics like criminalizing journalism, labeling civil disobedience as terrorism. Big agriculture has embraced all of this as a pathway to protect their profits and really keep consumers in the dark about what's happening.
Why did you single out photography? Just explain.
There is a wave of legislation that passed in multiple states in the U.S. called ag gag laws that criminalize anyone, including journalists, who take photographs of factory farm cruelty and pollution and workers' rights abuses. And now that's spread globally as well.
Why the title Little Red Barns?
This is the foundational myth. This is the story we're all raised on of what a farm looks like. And it struck me in the investigation that this is also the foundational myth of fascism. When we hear Make America Great Again, we're talking about this return to an idyllic past that never existed. And this is what fascists have always done. They kind of create this mythology that we have to return to this golden era. And therefore, their attacks on dissent today are legitimized.
We clearly have to continue this conversation. We will, and post it at democracynow.org. Will Potter, investigative journalist, author of Little Red Barns, Hiding the Truth from Farm to Fable. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
Support for KBU comes from its members and from Rumble on the River, presenting their 25th community gathering event focused on Portland area climate concerns on September 25th at 5 p.m. at 1241 Lloyd Center. The event will include live music, tabling, and a community forum. More info available by contacting 503-705-1943.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:01 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio, Jacqueline Keeler.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler with Wednesday Talk Radio. And our topic today is that, Kimmel's back, Jimmy Kimmel. He had his show again last night after being suspended by by ABC. And but is this the question is, but is the blue scare still here? And we'll go a little bit more into what the blue scare is, sort of reminiscent of the red scare. And you can call in here. The number is 503-231-8187. What do you think about these the attempt to by Trump to use the federal government to squelch free speech in this country and to any kind of speech that he makes him feel insulted? Is that what the government's supposed to be doing? And what does that say for our rights as citizens? And what do you think of the boycott that that got Kimmel back in the air as well? Which, once again, the number here is 503-231-8187, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio. So last night, Jimmy Kimmel returned, and he had an opening, an emotional opening to his show. The LA Times reported, Kimmel also said his ability to speak freely is something I'm embarrassed to say I took for granted until they pulled my friend Stephen Colbert off the air and tried to coerce the affiliates who run our show in the cities that you live in to take my show off the air. That's not legal, he continued. That's not American. That's un-American. We're going to ask also, is this blue scare that Trump is trying to promote and which people did get fired for, posting things about Charlie Kirk, the right wing activist who was murdered, posting things that they were taken to task for and even fired for. And so this is reminiscent of the tactics used during the Red Scare. In political terms, the Red Scare refers to periods of heightened fear of communism in the U.S., while the term the Blue Scare is the weaponization of anti-leftist panic against political opponents. Have Americans signal they are not falling for it. So do you think that this win and bringing Kimmel back on the air signifies that Americans are done with Trump's rhetoric, that they've seen just how far he will go and are turning on him, and maybe we will see some, quote unquote, normalization in our political sphere, in our political life, so here in America, and maybe a return to democratic principles. Once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler. And if you want to call in, please do. The number here is 503-231-8187, and that's the number here in the studio if you want to talk about this and how you feel about Kimmel's return last night, and also how you feel about the direction that free speech is going in this country and democratic rights in general, or democratic governance. And do you think that Trump's this blue scare he's trying to promote, and people have already lost their jobs over it, is it real? Is it really going to work for him? Are we seeing the American public turn against him? Call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. So as I mentioned, last night, Kimmel returned and, saying basically not backing down. He said that the attempt to take him off the air for what he said was un-American. He labeled it that. And so I think I'm going to read a little bit from what he said last night. And let me see here. I continue to quote from the LA Times article on it. And so the title of this, the headline of this reporting, this article in the LA Times is Jimmy Kimmel returns to ABC with emotional monologue defending free speech. We have to stand up. And so he returned Tuesday to his late show after a nearly week-long suspension and delivered an emotional monologue defending free speech, but did not issue an apology, which is something that that certain right-wing groups, particularly different media and broadcast groups, Nexstar and Sinclair, which our owners of ABC affiliates wanted him to do in order to consider putting him back on the air. And they're instead going to continue to keep him off their stations. So let's look at, so Walt Disney Company owns ABC and faced a lot of pushback in the past week, allegedly losing about $4 billion in value. And so they came back to the table with Kimmel, and also Kimmel was threatening them with a huge lawsuit, like a $1 billion lawsuit, and because he does have a contract with them, and so they announced that last week that they were suspending his show indefinitely. The decision came after Nexstar Media Group and Sinclair Broadcast Group, owners of ABC affiliates, said they would not air the talk series because of comments Kimmel made about the suspect in the shooting death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Even after Disney reversed the suspension, both companies said they would continue to keep Jimmy Kimmel live off air. And Kimmel was greeted by the studio audience with a long-standing ovation and chants of Jimmy. He cracked a joke to open, "Who had a weirder 48 hours, me or the CEO of Tylenol?" And so he thanked supporters, and he said, "Our government cannot be allowed to control what we do and do not say on television, and we have to stand up to it," he said. "I've been hearing a lot about what I need to say and do tonight, and the truth is, I don't think that what I have to say is going to make much of a difference. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't. I have no illusions about changing anyone's mind." What was important to him, though, was imparting that it was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man, Kimmel said through tears, referring to Kirk. And he talks about how he understands that some people may find his comments ill-timed or unclear. And he basically says that he might have felt the same way if the situation was reversed. And he has family members who obviously share kind of right-wing ideas and he doesn't agree with. But he says, "I don't think the murderer who shot Charlie Kirk represents anyone. This was a sick person who believed violence was a solution, and it isn't." Kimmel said, and I quoted this earlier in the show, at the top of the show, Kimmel also said his ability to speak freely is something I'm embarrassed to say I took for granted until they pulled my friend Steven off the air and tried to coerce the affiliates who run our show in the cities that you live in to take my show off the air. "That's not legal," he said. That's not American. That is un-American. So he said that he thanked Disney, and he said that the president of the United States made it very clear he wants to see me and the hundreds of people who work here fired from our jobs. Our leader celebrates Americans losing their livelihoods because he can't take a joke. That's a pretty strong punchback. He said that he felt sorry for President Trump, tried his best to cancel him. Instead, he forced millions of people to watch the show, and he might have to release the Epstein files to distract us from this. So there's a lot of comments that a lot of these things that Trump is doing is an attempt to divert attention away from the Epstein files. And so, that's some of what he said there. And it gives you a sense of what's going on there. So I'd like to hear your responses to that here. Oh, we had a caller. Hi, caller. Hi, John. You're on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, yeah, diversion. Trump's fired roughly 200,000 workers who are federal workers. Leah Pettit talked with us at KBOO a couple months ago. She was one of the people who got fired. She was a USAID worker out of Portland. And he's probably deported maybe 200,000 workers who are immigrants. So trying to get people fired is something he did on television himself as a TV celebrity.
Yep.
So that part's not surprising. Did you happen to see or do you know about Channel 2? Did they air Kimmel last night in Portland?
I didn't know. I didn't watch it. No, I don't know.
Okay, well, we just sent them an email out of Portland Great Panthers at Portland State. They're Sinclair, so they didn't air
Kimmel. Jeez.
And so what we asked was two things. A, you should carry Kimmel. We didn't elaborate and say, well, free speech is important, and lots of groups don't have free speech at all who are on the left, who don't own a TV network, and it would be useful to have more access to mainstream media from those groups, locally and nationally, like the Oregonian, for example. But the second thing we asked about, most organizers probably don't watch television per se these days and do social media, but they had a program on Channel 2, and you might have seen it. It aired twice. It was called Portland's Perception Problem. So they had 12 white, I guess you'd call them stakeholders, talk for an hour with their moderator, Steve Doohan. This aired twice in the last week. So we sent in a note to Steve Doohan, who is the on-air host, like, maybe you should do a second hour with groups that are kind of disenfranchised and would be a bit more diverse. I don't know if you heard or saw about that program.
No, I hadn't. I hadn't seen that.
So the three people we thought were interesting or annoying the most, they had Keith Wilson, the mayor. He wasn't necessarily bad. But they also had Andy Schmatz, who, and I'm probably saying his last name wrong. He's the police union president. And he said he liked some of the people who were there who were elected, which also included Olivia Clark, who's kind of the head of the West Side, the more conservative group on Portland City Council. She ran for city council president, but Candace Avalos opposed her from the more progressive side, and then Alana Pirtle-Guinea wound up being city council president. So he basically said there are some people there, Julia Brim Edwards, who are elected, who are more supportive of fighting crime and restoring Portland's reputation nationally. But he didn't name, like, the six members of the progressive group on city council, or Shannon Singleton or Megan Moyer on county commission, who defeated more conservative, more pro-police candidates. There's a woman named Vanessa Sturgeon. You might have come across her name. I thought she was really forthright and honest. She owns Tom Moyer Theaters, a possible boycott target, but also TMT Development is a big real estate company in town. Vanessa used to be on the TriMet board. But she said she thought local government could make Portland better for what this program represented if funds were diverted from three things. She wanted to take fund, and she named the names of the programs, which I thought was being honest. She said Preschool for All should have money taken away, the Clean Energy Fund should have money taken away, and the Housing Support Services Fund should be taken away. And those money should be redirected to things that would support making Portland's reputation better, or fighting crime, or supporting police. So I thought she was a little specific. I thought that was helpful. There's also a guy who talked there, a third one, Andy Hone, H-O-A-N. He's director of what used to be PBA, Portland Business Alliance. It's Portland Metro Chamber now. And he cited these stats, which may or may not be accurate, depending, saying that Portland's the worst city with Memphis in the country. Like, those two cities are supposed to be number 80 and number 81 for bad crime or bad drugs or bad graffiti, whatever, stuff like that. So we basically sent an email in this morning to Channel 2 saying, A, put Kimmel on air, and B, have an alternate program where more diverse voices from different communities, not just white affluent folks. We'll see if we hear back from them. Do you think that's a worthwhile tactic? I mean, we're not saying explicitly people should boycott Channel 2, but that could be a tactic locally.
I think it's a great idea. I really do. I'll try to get a link to that up on our website so people can look at those folks in detail and maybe figure out ways to boycott them, as you mentioned, or to definitely discuss with Channel 2 ways that they could improve their reporting.
I should ask you, too, did you think the Disney boycott was really effective in getting Kimmel back on the air?
Well, there is some question whether there was always the plan to bring him back on the air, right?
Sure.
And,
right.
But I'm not sure. I mean, I want to believe it was. I mean, I think that feeling like we have some power in this situation, even if it's just as, as consumers, is something, right? And it would be nice to think that's possible, I think. And maybe we need some positive encouragement right now to keep going, right, to keep active, you know, not to just let it happen.
Right. So any other thoughts or strategy about Trump more, or things in Oregon more locally, that you might have this morning?
Yeah, I guess would be to continue to work together. You know, I think a lot of times we spend time, you know, on our screens, and more, we need to do more things together actively to fight this, and that we need to believe that we can do it. You know, we can't just give up our democracy without a fight. So that's not very specific, I know, but that's the general idea.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, thank you so much, John. So, yeah, that's a great point John brought up. And I think I'm looking at an article for Willamette Week that came out yesterday that says Portland TV stations are in the middle of Trump's bid to cancel Kimmel. If the next Star deal goes through, three of Portland's four major local broadcasters will be owned by media companies that offered anticipatory obedience to the president. And they're saying the local ABC affiliate KATU-TV is owned by Sinclair Broadcast Group, which says it will preempt Jimmy Kimmel Live amid ongoing conversations with the network about the show's future. And let's see here. Let me see the other ones. Among the stations that Nexstar would receive with a purchase of Tegna, that is another. So Nexstar is seeking FCC approval to purchase one of its competitors, Tegna. It has ample motivation to curry favor with Trump. This is one of the major factors, is that that these corporations are selling out our democracy in order to make a buck. And so this merger with Tegna, Nexstar and Tegna, is one of the major factors that are seen with pulling Kimmel off the air. And so among the stations that Nexstar would receive with a purchase of Tegna is KGW-TV, the local NBC affiliate, and also Nexstar already owns Coin TV. And so, yeah, that's three. Hi, we have another caller. Hi, Shiloh.
Hello.
Hi, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hi, Cable, big fan. I am not a person who watches the news or has access to a lot of internet, but I was listening to your show, and yeah, this blue scare thing that's happening, it's gotten me kind of concerned.
Yep. And so what do you think we could do about it, and what do you think about how real it is?
You know, I think it's very real that people who are speaking out people who are standing against fascism are being shadow banned across the internet. You can see with the Free Palestine movement, you know, our country is funding the genocide that is happening, and anybody who speaks out about it is being intimidated and threatened and extorted and up to and including being threatened and harassed. It's some real scary stuff out there.
Yeah, definitely. And so what do you think we can do about it? And do you think that this Kimmel returning to the air is any sign that Americans might have the stomach to challenge Trump's blue scare?
I can't speak on behalf of Kimmel because, like I said, I don't have the internet or access to working phone most of the time. I am a transient, you could call me an independent journalist.
Mm-hmm.
But I have
right
been,
you
know, just taking pictures in my own neighborhood, getting together with my houseless friends, getting together with, you know, people who are, I mean, anarchists. Antifa is not an organization that's funded or run by anyone. It's just the people recognizing who are really in our communities and banding together and, you know, knowing who's the real people and knowing our neighbors. You know, we all go to the same food bank. We all go to the same places every day. We all ride the same buses. And after a little while, you just get to know people, and you know the people who are your neighbors, and you know the people who are acting funny, because the people who are, like, I have got some things that I could say that would identify myself, but I don't want to, because my blood family are the ones who are the white supremacists, who are the people in ICE. And they are the ones who would wish me harm, not my neighbors. You know, I'm white, and my black and brown neighbors, my neighbors from all over the world, you know, I have friends who speak Punjabi. I have friends from high school who we could barely understand each other in the locker rooms, but I had a better time hanging around them, barely knowing their language, and just sharing humanity with each other. I think it's really time for us to step away from the screen, go outside, start talking to our neighbors again, because the TV, the social media, all this stuff that divides us,
You know, it's funded by the people who want to keep us divided. If we stick together, if we band together as a community, they can't break us. Yeah. They can't arrest us all. They can't kill us all. And, you know, power to the people. Solidarity forever.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, the you bring up so many factors in how it's affecting us at so many levels, from watching our other American citizens and residents to be held in terror by this this ice, which basically begins to appear more like some sort of Trump's personal police force, you know, and of course he's weaponizing the entire sort of apparatus of the U.S. government, and but it's more like black shirts or something, and and I think I'm so glad to hear that you have that kind of you know your neighbors. I mean, so many people don't, or they are scared to know their neighbors because they might be, like you said, harboring ideas like white supremacy that would be pretty terrifying to interact with and feel very unsafe. You know, I have to say, as a brown woman, I do sometimes do think about that. I try not to let it get to me too much, you know, and you know, Portland's a very white city and community, and sometimes you wonder what's really going on, because of course they're not going to talk that way in front of you, you know, and stuff. So you wonder what's really being said and thought.
And I'll just divulge a little bit about myself here. I'm a transgender individual. You know, I was born a woman. I got this voice now. I look like a man. Mm-hmm. I look like my drug runner brother.
Oh, no.
So when people see me on the street, they're like, oh, hey, it's that bitch. Excuse me. Sorry, I said one of the seven deadly sins of Carlin. You know, it's really terrifying how mask off the white supremacists can be at this moment. We've got these Call of Duty cosplayers running around, and, you know, I've attempted to call 911, and people have said that they won't help me. Hmm. You know, I have attempted to go to the doctor, and I get trespassed from the premises like that as soon as I say I'm trans.
Oh my
I have
God.
Not been able to have access to my own hormones since before August 10th, when my cis Christian roommate lied to our property management company and said that I was being aggressive towards them when they were threatening and stalking and harassing me. And it's been a heck of a time, but I mean, I'm glad to be back in Rose City. I love this city. I love the people of, you know, all over the city, but especially Northeast Portland. I believe that the city of Portland owes all of the people they redlined out of here reparations. I truly believe that this is from a lily white boy, you know, city of Portland, Rose City, give these black people what they're owed. PPP, stop killing our neighbors. Like, justice for Patrick Kimmins and T.T. Gulley. I'm never going to forget their names.
Mm-hmm. And one last question. What do you think of the way that, you know, the whole Charlie Kirk thing has been weaponized against trans people in this country, even though it's apparent that he came from a very conservative, Mormon, gun-toting, Trump-supporting family?
Oh, I didn't hear anything about.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Are they trying to connect it to trans people?
Yeah, I guess the guy, his roommate was trans, and there's all these questions. Yeah, it's a big rabbit hole, but these alleged texts that people are questioning are even real and everything. And sadly,
I don't think a person like Charlie Kirk would have a trans roommate.
Oh no, no. I mean, like, his the person accused of shooting him. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, sorry. I haven't been following the news that closely.
No, that's fine.
I'm trying to survive as a transient.
No,
trans.
Yes, of
There's
course.
Not anywhere safe for me to be. I'm just out here with all my friends. You know, this morning I was with my friend Nina. She's a nice black woman, and she was helping me around the city. We were hanging out, and, you know, I'm just on the street here trying to survive, and I don't really care what Charlie Kirk or whatever any conservative person does, you know, I think they should probably mind their own business and just let us all be, let us live.
Well, let's hope we can get back to that. And thank you so much for calling in, and you know, stay safe out there, and and definitely call in again.
Yeah.
Okay.
You too.
All right.
I love y'all at KBOO. You're doing good work. I hope you get all the funding in the world.
Thank you so much.
Good work.
You too. Okay. Bye. All right. We have another caller. Santiago, hi. You're our Wednesday Talk Radio. Good morning. How are you?
Doing all right. How about you?
Good. Good.
Good. There's a quote I wanted to read since yesterday was George Jackson Day. He said, settle your quarrels, come together, understand the reality of our situation, understand that fascism is already here, that the people are already dying who could be saved, that generations more will live poor, butchered half-lives if you fail to act. Do what must be done, discover your humanity and your love and revolution. That was written in, like, the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, so the notion, you know, that fascism is like this new thing that just showed up with Trump is absolutely ridiculous. You know, we fail to see the other side of the coin of fascism, which is imperialism. Mm. You know, imperialism is imperialism is what America's been doing to other people for generations now. You know, it's kind of like how the Germans created the idea of Lebensraum in the Congo. Mm-hmm. So all of the buttons they manufactured for the Nazi movement were manufactured in portions of Africa, and all the Nazis had to do was flip the switches and turn things inward. Mm-hmm. It's not that much different from America. America has manufactured all of these fascist tactics in the Middle East, in Eastern Europe. You know, I would even venture to say in Western Europe itself through the Marshall Plan. So all America had to do was flip those switches. And what I really see for a lot of it is that, you know, what a lot of these the democratic leadership is against is incompetent imperialism. Because, I mean, we've seen in the past that when it comes to indigenous-led movements, and black-led movements, that the liberal establishment, in order to preserve order, has had no problem in silencing radical and revolutionary voices. You know, the brother who was on just now talked about, you know, people being against fascism, being shadow banned. You know, the Democrats have limited fascism to simply the Republican Party, but it's not showing the complicity that Democrats have in creating the situation we're in now. I mean, think about the water protectors under Obama.
Yeah.
You know, and the Black Lives Matter movement under Obama. You know, these were huge radical movements that were effectively almost silenced.
Yeah.
If not like banned to talk about. So, I mean, while Trump is a danger, he's also a buffoon. And, you know, and even if things are dangerous right now, we can see the mask unraveling, even with the MAGA movement was looking for a martyr, and they thought they found one in Charlie Kirk. And while the Trantifa trend might have gathered a little bit of steam, people are recognizing that things aren't adding up because, you know, they can't hang on to the narrative. They were trying to say it was some trans Antifa person, but now with all of the foment again that's been brewing against Israel, granted from an anti-Semitic end, which is not good, but the foment that people are gathering against Israel, there's people who are saying that Israel did it, which nobody knows at this point what's going on, but they can't even hang on to their own narrative.
Yeah.
So it would behoove the party that's supposed to be the actual opposition to actually come in and make a solid stance with the working class, but they're not going to do it. Because ultimately they are benefited by the same people that pay the Republicans. So, what I tell people is that we need a workers' party. And, you know, a lot of Democrats and progressives, you know, kind of like sneer at that because they think it's like we're dividing the vote. But the fact of the matter is that people don't really want to vote for the Democrats right now, especially as they've seen how ineffectual in the at the least and at the worst complicit in what's going on to being affecting people. I mean, where are the people who were calling Trump a fascist during the, you know, during the campaign? You know, Chuck Schumer's playing ball and trying to sell a book. You know, Kamala Harris hasn't said much trying to sell a book. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, a workers' movement, would be a great way to reveal the hypocrisy on both sides, because right now we've got two groups of people warring against each other who really don't know a thing about each other. Mm-hmm. You know, I've still got some hope that this thing can be turned around if we can get somebody in there who can expose the hypocrisy of liberal democracy itself. Because liberal democracy depends upon capitalism, and capitalism ultimately, even at its best, is still a race to the bottom, where a small group of people with a bunch of money own the means of production and, you know, and you know, work us to death hour by hour for larger profits while we continually take home less and less in wages.
And now we see the tech bros, the billionaires, sidling up to Trump and promoting AI, which will... Yeah. You know, replace more people and lose more jobs for people.
Well, you know, and here's the thing that I'll say, because I got into a little bit of an argument with Sherry last Wednesday, because I talked about how the advent of the supercomputer and the jet engine aided in the gutting of the working class here in America. And, you know, she came back with, technology isn't the enemy. And I didn't get to finish it. But it's not that technology is the enemy, it's that capitalism is the enemy. You know, the jet engine, the supercomputer, if ran by the workers, the people who actually do the jobs, could have actually improved things so that people would have to work less and gain more and still be able to have health care and good pay. Well, but because the technology is in the hands of people who are looking to make every last penny, scraping the bottom
sociopaths.
Of the barrel.
Yeah.
All, you know, even AI, while it is a huge drain on resources, doesn't have to be this fearful thing. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with it, but like, because technology under capitalism is chained to profits, it ultimately
that's its own algorithm
like
there.
This,
Yeah.
Well, and it's the same thing with RFK.
Yeah.
You know,
RFK. I want to respond to this really fast. What you said, you've said so much.
Go
that's
ahead.
So good. And I want to respond to it. So, yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I've been working on my next book, which is about the Manhattan Project's impact on Indian communities, Indian Native nations in this country, and my own family's experience with the building of the atomic bomb and its aftermath. You know, I lost my aunt a few years ago. She was a downwinder on the Navajo Nation, exposed to uranium mining, and she died at 62. You know, and the government paid her family $15,000 for her death. You know, that's how much the rest of her life was worth to the federal government. But we were talking about technology not being the problem, but corporation, you know, capitalism. I mean, so many during, you know, the Red Scare and during the Cold War, it was often posited that democracy and that capitalist democracy were hand in hand, that they were, you know, from collectivism and all this stuff. But you can see now that these corporations and these tech bros are willing to sell out democracy just to continue to achieve, I don't know what, profits, mm-hmm. power, grandiosity.
Profits for sure.
Yeah. And
profits
so,
sure.
And you noted that, you know, I think I noted earlier in the show that, you know, various corporations aided and supported Adolf Hitler. And the Nazi
mm-hmm.
Party, basically funding
exactly.
his rise to power, you know, and they suppressed they embraced the Nazi regime, but suppressed the unions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I
think that's a really good point, because, you know, because I continue to say that communism is our best way out of this.
Mm.
And, you know, and a lot of progressives and, you know, Democrats will push back and say, oh, you know, they'll be like, oh, blah, 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 Stalinism. But here's the thing.
Oh, wait, let me finish what I'm saying. Sorry, I have a part of, you're trying to catch up with you, a lot of your stuff here. But so let me just finish what I was saying. But the different German corporations, well-known ones, like Siemens and Volkswagen and BMW and Porsche, Hugo Boss, of course, and who made their uniforms, IG Farben, Krupp, all were, you know, involved in this. And with the, you know, when you're talking about, it depends on like what sort of Aegis, that the that these technological breakthroughs are basically governed by, you know, we are looking at with the Manhattan Project and the atomic bomb. A lot of one of the things that people don't realize is that communism, even after World War II, was a much more mainstream sort of political thing. And I think I was listening to Ezra Klein's recent New York Times podcast, which looks at the Blue Scare, and he interviewed a guy who sort of did a lot of work on the Red Scare. And really, it was the work of the Red Scare to really marginalize and get rid of any sort of ideas of communism out of the United States. And you look at the Manhattan Project, where you did have folks, even Oppenheimer himself, who was a victim of the Red Scare, basically felt that the Soviet Union should have access to the technology. The technology should be shared, partly because it's the scientific, you know, ethos that things should be shared internationally, for the science, for the progression of science, right? And also that they felt like that it would be more, you know, that we wouldn't face like this Cold War if we had been more open, right? So that's sort of where a lot of the scientists were at. But of course, a lot of those were later sort of blackballed. And so you see there where the technology, the people who created the technology, had a very different view of how it should be used. My book, I'm ending up looking more at Leo Szilard and his ideas, and because I think that he really sort of shows that there's this morality to the scientists that is missing in the story, and that was sidelined by you know, other folks in government. And and of course, you know, you're talking about the fascism aspect. I mean, certainly there are reports published in 2025 that identify similarities between Donald Trump's tactics and agenda and those of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, which you mentioned, the middle, you know, the Eastern Europe, and their strongman style, and also the way in which Orban dismantled democracy in that country, which did involve basically, taking over the universities and what they teach. And you see that's what Trump's been doing. And you know, with Putin, of course, you know, he murdered or drove out comedians and stuff in Russia when he took over, you know, tortured them. So this is all
absolutely.
This is all a playbook that he's following. And the Democrats, you just have to look at how they approach Zoran Mondomny in the New York mayoral race, you know, and the New York City race for mayor, and how, you know, they were very reluctant to endorse him and his win. He still has, as of a day ago, a double-digit lead over his Republican rival. Do you know what I mean? And so they're only starting to, you know, come around. I think Harris recently endorsed Mamdani. And so, but
well,
many Democrats are reluctant to do so still. And then you're looking at the whole, you know, far right leadership, and they are, you know, you're saying that a lot of their issues are driven by anti-Semitism, and you have Nick Fuentes, who is very anti-Semitic, and has talked about horrible ideas about I mean, he is basically the country's most prominent anti-Semite, and now he's trying to take on the Charlie Kirk leadership. And even though he was, I guess, very critical of Charlie Kirk, and, you know, he's involved in Holocaust denial, and even, and then of course you have other Candace Owen and Megyn Kelly. They are both becoming anti-Israel and pushing a thing about that Charlie Kirk, may have been facing pushback from Israeli representatives, because I guess they helped fund his rise. They helped fund, allegedly helped fund Charlie Kirk's organization. And so, but I guess AIPAC has funded so much political stuff in this country, honestly, you know, and
absolutely. It's really gross how in control they are of the political system.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact is that they, you know, Joe Biden said it in 95, Israel is our best and greatest investment. And if Israel didn't exist, we should invent one, because they need a foothold in the Middle East, because, you know, they've been trying to keep democracy movements from happening in the Middle East. at least at that point, for over like 50 years, because it started, I think it's really started with Mossadegh in Iran, because he nationalized the oil and kicked out the British and U.S., but then they came in and reinstalled the Shah, which then led in that led into the current.
Yeah, well, I think we're, the history is very, the Shah and everything is a whole other story, a whole other show, really. But yeah, thank you so much for calling in. We'll have to, I don't know if we have another caller. Thank you so much. Hi, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
As I was replying to your earlier question and comment, Antifa. Mm-hmm. Antifa means anti-fascist.
Yep.
And it was, the term was coined in Portland, Oregon at Lynn's, as a shorthand term. And this was in resistance to the white fascists terrorizing people.
Yeah.
So Rose City Antifa was founded in 2007 to unite to protect folks. But before that, in Lynn's Park, in 1988, there was response to an Ethiopian man, I think 28 years old, who was surrounded by a bunch of white supremacists and beat to death with baseball bats, etc.
Oh my God!
This.
Hello. Oh, go ahead.
This was, shocking. The whites who didn't know terrorism.
Okay, you're breaking up a bit.
What's prevalent? And they tried to awaken folks. Response 1988 to the fascist, violent, white supremacist skinheads was the anti-racist skinheads. And then in 2007, Rose City Antifa was again responding to fascism that was expressed both by the Portland police and other so-called law enforcement and stoked with the white supremacist, anti-labor, Oregonian, Republican Party, etc. If you listen to Mike Crimshaw, also on KABU, they have a documentary, It Did Happen Here, telling about that. But you collect to make firewood, and you bundle, easier to carry. But also you can break an individual stick, but not a bundle. So it was a sense that we are coming together to be strong, but also using that stick to hurt others. So in Europe, fascists were those who were based out of fear. At that point, it wasn't so much racist, because most of the folks they saw were white, or they didn't mind the more sophisticated, intellectual, artistic, and better educated African Moors from Spain. But it was the a force and terror, violence to control workers, the serfs, the peasants, etc.
So this was under Mussolini's
and then
leadership.
Those who were enslaved.
Yeah.
So fascism has always been the glorification of violence and terror to injure, impoverish, control, rape, dismember, and kill people, as well as killing their animals, just as fascism was used to kill the sheep in your mother's homeland by the U.S. government with helicopters, etc. Fascism has always been used, whether or not it has a nationalistic or religious centering. Mussolini, the dictator of Italy, said that a better name for fascism was corporatism, because it used the economic body or corpus, the corpse, of corporations to control workers and resources and government and religions.
Huh.
And it's
the
corporatism through capitalism that is causing so much of the problems, and we need to not use the same tactics, the same paranoia, the same us versus them, the same hatred, dehumanizing and violence, whether we are doing it against Palestinians in order to control petroleum, methane, and travel, or if we're using it against environmentalists, indigenous people, or workers here. Fascism has been used against immigrants and unionized workers. It's been used against health workers. It's been used against women. And we can be anti-fascism, oppression through violence, by being Antifa. And Antifa, or anti-fascism, has existed as resistance all along. It was seen by Jesus. It was seen by Native Americans. It's been seen by indigenous peoples all around the world resisting fascism. It's not just a bunch of whites from a European-based political theory. So we can all unite in not just being anti the violence and terrorism, but being pro liberty, equality, and justice for all, pro the interconnectivity of the earth.
I see. Wow, that's, you brought up a lot of really great points, and bringing it back to fascism as the sort of operating principle and the history of it is fascinating. And I just looked at the Wikipedia on corporatism, and they do have a section on fascist corporatism. And it says, in Italy from 1922 until 1943, corporatism became influential amongst Italian nationalists led by Benito Mussolini. The 1920 Charter of Carnaro gained much popularity as the prototype of a corporative state, having displayed much within its tenets as a guild system combining the concepts of autonomy and authority in a special thesis. So, that's an interesting thing there. But I was going to also touch on the idea of the of the Proud Boys, and and here we had the Patriot people are here, and but they according to Hate Watch, a project of the Southern Poverty Law Center, the head of Trump's administration's immigration policy, Tom Homan, held multiple meetings with a far-right activist linked to the Proud Boys, including one closed-door session in Chicago to coordinate on deportation efforts. So this, you're talking about the use of fear, and certainly the use of intimidation and fear is really what we're seeing happening on the ground with ICE. And some commentators have compared these tactics to the brown shirts, the paramilitary wing of the Nazi Party, and of course there's the black shirts under Mussolini in Italy, and whether it's just inflammatory or not, I guess depends on who you ask. Hyperbole, but the way in which they used street violence and intimidation to suppress political opponents and terrorize minority groups would fit very well with what's happening here, what we see happening in our own cities, or even the occupation of cities like Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. And
and we have solutions. We've seen indigenous solidarity. We saw indigenous and African-American and poor white servants and slaves in solidarity, which is what led to them inventing more of this racist society. So they would not unite and against the rich overvote. We've also seen solutions through Portland. You can talk to Kent Ford, founding the Portland Black Panthers. You know, we have solidarity in defense, solidarity in education, solidarity in letting people know about the oppressive politics, and so then they are not attracted to drug addiction. Having breakfast, having after-school programs, having elder care, having food, local food production, farms, gardens, care for the disabled. I mean, having healthy recreation, so that, and a healthy sense of identity, so you don't have to go to gangs, whether they're fascists or otherwise. We have the solutions. We know it is about our interconnectivity, our love, and that is why, after a 30-year evaluation by the FBI and some other agencies, to look at the size of then Portland cities across the United States and larger, the one city that was supposed to be the most resilient against disasters and martial law is Portland because of KABU. And KABU because it was having folks care about an idea and care about each other and work together. We can do it. And that's why they're attacking us.
Yeah, that's why we're a threat, and definitely, and that's why they came down on us. And certainly the things of what you're talking about, sort of folks coming together to support each other, mutual aid, is such a crucial aspect to fighting back. And I know that a friend of mine on the reservation, Cleve Benally, he was very active in leading mutual aid during the pandemic for Native, for both Navajo and Hopi communities and Native people, particularly the houseless in Flagstaff, living on the streets, making sure they had the resources they need. And it's such a great organizing alternative to, you know, I guess corporatism, and also, you know, we're seeing a lot of federal cuts of crucial programs, you know, the elimination of resources that, like the food bank and other, you know, things that people depend on to stay alive, you know, USAID, everything, millions of people and children have died, you know, due to this administration and tech bros like Elon Musk. And it's horrific. And yet they feel so entitled. And here we have this egotistical man, you know, basically displaying to the rest of the world that this is what Americans voted for. And, you know, in my book, Standoff, I took a very long look at the two standoffs that happened in 2016. You know, here in Oregon, we had the standoff with the Bundys. And of course, you know, they they're a Mormon family. They also represent the sort of entitlement of a colonist to the land that they took, that they received as part of you know, the occupation of Native lands, and their right to do whatever they want with it. The you know, and then that of Standing Rock. My father is Ihanktawan Dakota. You know, we do have relatives up at Standing Rock. My grandmother's family lived there for many years, and you know, and going back there and seeing how my father's people, the Dakota and Lakota people, were standing up, and how they were joined by so many people across the world. And it is, you know, it was amazing being in that camp, because, you know, my mother's Navajo and my father's Dakota. Well, he's half Lakota as well. But it's, you know, it's it was amazing to see our traditional way of life being brought back, you know, to walk through that camp and see the teepees. And you know, I think my great-great-grandfather had been born, you know, in the 1800s across the river from there. You know, we were camped up there. And it was just kind of to see something of what this, it was also the social organization, which was really based on, according to my great-great-aunt Ella Deloria, it was based on giving, not taking. You know, you had no social standing if you were a taker in a community like that. You only gained social standing through giving everything away, showing that you weren't beholden to things, but to people. You put your trust in people, right? That's what she wrote. And that was what gave you social standing to be a leader in that community. And it's such a different idea. It's hard to even, you know, for people to even believe it's true. I mean, I took Native studies at Dartmouth College, and I was in class with all these very wealthy white men, you know, young men from wealthy families who rule the world. And they just could not believe that what my great aunt wrote in those books. She was an ethnologist who worked under Franz Boas at Columbia University. And, you know, this was true, that any of this was true. You know, she graduated from Columbia Teachers College in 1915. And so the elders that she was interviewing were people who had been alive and adults before the Americans came. And, you know, I had these young white guys in my class kind of sneering at, like, this can't be true. This can't be true. And, you know, I just, there is a vision. We don't. It doesn't have to be this way, and I think that's what we always have to remember, that there is another way. There's ways in which human beings have organized themselves, and it's our job to figure that out and to make it happen and make it scalable, and that's, you know, I think I carry that with me, and I just hope that, you know, we can choose a better way, and we can learn not be controlled by these algorithms that try to divide us or sort us and keep us apart from each other. So that's what I have to say. But I don't know if our caller's still alive. Yep. What did you say? Sorry, say that again.
But love is also truth and principle, and it's very strong. It's not wimby-wamby. Mm-hmm. There's a fierce love that we protect the earth, we protect our communities, we protect the rights of those who would seem to be marginalized. And that is part of what motivates you and makes me just love and appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we have to carry that forward. Thank you so much. So it's time to wrap it up, I'm being told. So thank you all for listening, and thank you callers for calling in. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I'm Jacqueline Keeler, and I'll see you in a few weeks.
Jeremiah.
And we are Amnesia, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.